I want to emphasize that Dan Smoot has had the kind of training that makes him extremely careful in finding out facts. You don't work for the FBI and take any liberty with facts or misrepresent them or anything of the sort. You have to know what is truth. Then in 1955, Dan Smoot started the Smoot Report, with which you're all familiar, I hope, because it's one of the fine publications and services of this country. I don't have to say anything more about Dan Smoot. I think you all know what a great work he is doing. I personally regard it as one of the most valuable services which anyone is rendering today in the great cause of informing the American people of the truth and trying to enlighten them as they must be enlightened to win the great battle we're waging. Mr. Dan Smoot.
Very much. I would like to reply in part to the gracious comment that Mr. McClure made about me. I feel that if every community in this land had a newspaper comparable to his, the future would look brighter than it does. What a fine gathering of Americans. Donald Jackson, you've done a remarkable job. It would be quite impossible for me to tell you how delighted Mrs. Smoot and I are to be here tonight. I believe that with the exception of his loving wife, Yolanda, no one else on earth could say, "We love you, D.B., with more heartfelt sincerity than we can. And I can't really explain why we feel that way without giving some background about us. As Mr. McClure said, from 1951 to 1955, I was the radio and television commentator for Facts Forum. Each week on about 80 television stations and 350 radio stations, I discussed the great controversial issues of the day, giving both sides, setting out the arguments of totalitarian liberals on the one hand and of constitutional conservatives on the other. During 4 years of thus debating with myself, I received a tremendous amount of mail. A great deal of it from conservative businessmen who denounced me roundly for the liberal side of my broadcast and told me that if I ever found the courage and sense to produce a broadcast which just gave the side of constitutional principles and truth, they would support me all the way. Now, I agreed with those critics. Since totalitarian liberals already had a monopoly of the media of mass communication, it seemed absurd for me to give half of my 30 minutes a week to presenting their arguments. I felt somewhat like the devil's errand boy. So, pressed by my inner convictions and by my wife, and encouraged by all the conservative businessmen who promised support, I resigned from Facts Forum. In July 1955, Mrs. Smoot and I started an independent broadcasting and publishing business. Every week we got out the Dan Smoot Report for sale by subscription. I briefed down the report for a 15-minute broadcast. A news analysis that businessmen could sponsor as advertising in the same way that businessmen sponsor liberal news commentators. Our operation was financed entirely by profit from sales, so that we had no angels, no organizations to answer to, just customers. We called our venture publishing and broadcasting, but there was not much broadcasting involved for a while. Before I could broadcast, I had to find businessmen who would sponsor my broadcast. I had kept letters from thousands of conservative businessmen who promised me support if I ever got a program that gave the constitutional principles they believed in, When I notified them that I now had the kind of program they wanted, they uniformly told me to stay in there and fight. They said I was producing the best material ever, and they were behind me. But they had to stay far enough behind not to get involved. They agreed with everything I said, but they could not sponsor my broadcast because now that I had dropped the liberal side, my broadcast was too controversial. A conservative businessman cannot be expected to risk alienating customers. Socialists buy soap too, you know. Conservative businessmen generally stayed so far behind me that they didn't even subscribe to my report. Although I am still called the hired voice of the Texas oil millionaires, I don't believe that five Texas oil men have ever even subscribed to my report. Liberals contend that only the fabulously rich are constitutional conservatives, and that's about as far from the truth as liberal contentions generally are. Most of the fabulously rich are totalitarian liberals, especially those who didn't earn their wealth themselves. The simple truth is that the great middle class of modest means or less are by and large the dedicated patriots trying to restore the Republic. I recall one extremely prosperous Dallas businessman who called on me. He was a subscriber, and he complimented me on my report, but he said that I wasn't reaching enough people to do any good. Totalitarian liberals already in control of all the media of mass communication, of government, of the big foundations, of most of the educational institutions, were socializing the country so fast that he saw little hope. I agreed that things were bad, but pointed out that if all of us who already knew would just do the best we could, there was a lot to hope for. He didn't understand me, and so I explained. I told him that he was helping pay for the very brainwashing and socialist propaganda that he criticized. He was indignant. I reminded him that his company every year at Christmas gave approximately 500 Life magazine subscriptions to customers and friends, charging the whole thing off as advertising. I reminded him of Life's editorial policy and of its frequent distortion of news. And so I said, you are using the resources of your company to help pay for the propaganda that is destroying the very system that made your company possible. Now think what it would mean to me and to the work that I am doing, the principles we both believe in, if instead of giving subscriptions to Life magazine, you gave subscriptions to my report. Then he said, you're right. I'd never thought of that. I have been subsidizing people who are cutting my own throat. And I could be giving subscriptions to your publication in the same way. About a week later, he called on me again, his face aglow with self-satisfaction. Dan, he said, you hit me where it hurt, and I've already taken steps to do what you suggested. I'll never again give a subscription to a publication that advocates big government and socialism, or even subscribe to it myself. Now, he said, I had intended to switch over to the report, the same list, but I talked over the problem with my experts and my advisors, and we agreed that we better not do that because your report is controversial. So this year, instead of giving Life magazine, we're going to give Reader's Digest. But Mrs. Smoot and I developed a sense of humor about the conservative businessmen who stayed so far behind us they were plumb out of sight. When a letter came in from one of them saying, Smoot, you stay in there and fight, but don't use my name, Mrs. Smoot would just mark it F.A. That meant it was to be put in our Fearless American file. In the fall of 1956, when I was in Los Angeles to speak at the Freedom Club, Dr. Feithiel asked me to film some television programs with him. He had an interview-type program, and he particularly wanted me to repeat some information on monopolistic unions that I'd had in a recent report. Now, Dr. Feithiel has always been a kind and loyal friend to me. I wanted to oblige him, but I didn't want to hurt him. I said, Dr. Feithiel, if I say on your television program about union bosses, what I had in that report, you won't get it on the air, and you'll lose your sponsor. And he said, Dan, we may not get it on the air, but it won't run off my sponsor. When we'd finished filming the programs, he revealed that he had already taken the liberty to take me out to meet his sponsor. He said he is one of the most fabulous men in Southern California, and something tells me that you two ought to get together. Well, I didn't know who his sponsor was, and I didn't want to go, but I wouldn't have minded too much if Dr. Fifield hadn't added the line. He said, really, Dan, this man is a fearless American. That day, on my first visit with the president of the Lewis Food Company, I did agree that Dr. Fifield's sponsor, D.B. Lewis, was a fascinating personality. Without unnecessary formalities, we began talking. Most conservative businessmen condemn in broad general terms what's happening to our country. D.B. dealt in particulars. He talked about the waste and unconstitutionality of specific programs, giving examples, naming names. I was amazed at the breadth of his information and the depth of his understanding. I remember thinking to myself as I sat there in his office, this fella has a prosperous business that somebody else runs for him. He apparently just sits around here and reads all day. Then he took me on a tour of his plant. From the front office to the parking lot, he was on top of every detail. As we walked along, D.B. was telling me about some recent stupid decision of the Interstate Commerce Commission. Abruptly, he stopped and crossed a big room to speak to a laborer lubricating a machine. Out of the corner of his eye, he had seen the fellow putting in 3 squirts of grease in a grease cup. D.B. patiently explained that that cup was designed to take only 1 squirt at a time. There was no point in wasting 2 squirts of grease because grease costs money. We went into one shop where a tremendous machine was down. Mechanics and engineers working on it. D.B. took a quick look at the vital organs of that machine and asked a few questions and then told him what to do about it. Apparently, he had designed the thing. It was easy to see that this man, in a free and competitive market, could beat his competitors to death because he could figure out ways to give customers the most and the best for the least. I was impressed by something else. As we went through the plant that day, in every department, he introduced me to the employees, if that could be done without interrupting their work. From the way they reacted and from the length of time most of them seemed to have been around there, I'd say they ought to be here tonight. They love D.B. Here was a rough and tough operator in the free market, a man, an expert at getting the most out of every deal with everybody he dealt with. But the people he dealt with daily, the men on his payroll, had been there a long time and liked it. Emerson once said, he is great who is what he is from nature and who never reminds us of others. I did not recognize greatness at first glance, but I had not been with D.B. Lewis 1 hour before I realized that here was an original and exclusive model. I had never seen anything like him before. But I still didn't understand Dr. Fifield's determination to get us together. During our first visit, which lasted several hours, D.B. did not once mention my work until we were shaking hands to say goodbye. And then in that husky monotone, which I have since become so familiar with, he said, that sheet you put out every week is all right. It's all right. But you're not reaching enough people. You ought to have factual information like that on radio and television, so that you'll reach enough people to do some good. I thought of Mrs. Smoot's fearless American file. But I said, well, I do have a radio program, but I haven't found more than 4 or 5 sponsors, and I have not found any television sponsors at all. And he said, I may sponsor it myself. Well, that was enough for me to unclassify him for the fearless American file. But back in Dallas, Mrs. Smoot reminded me of what we both knew so well. The first man who sponsored my television broadcast would be a pioneer in television advertising. Pioneering has never been easy, and society has never produced a superabundance of pathfinders. We were looking for someone whom Mrs. Smoot had begun to doubt we would ever find. A man who has that combination of conviction, vision, and courage, which produces greatness. She gently pulled me down off my cloud, but about 2 weeks later, D.B. called me long distance to report that two television stations had thrown Dr. Fifield's program off the air because of what I said about union bosses. I braced myself expecting this to be the preface to his bowing out, but he kept talking. In his matter-of-fact way, he said, "You better figure some prices and make a pilot film so we can get started." Mrs. Smoot tried to ease me off my cloud again. She said, "Your sample film will be the test. Wait till he sees what you plan to put on television." Well, these sample or pilot films, you know, are supposed to be the kind that won't run sponsors off. But I am an unreconstructed rebel, so I approached the problem from the other end. I made my pilot film blunt and strong. If DB was going to get scared, I wanted him to scare before we got started. God deliver me from timid patriots. I simply cannot stomach conservative businessmen who say they are willing to sponsor patriotic programs if they can be guaranteed that it won't hurt their business or get the government down on them. Apparently, they have no such fears about sponsoring programs that pervert truth. I have no respect for conservatives generally who are willing to strike a blow for freedom if an insurance policy guaranteeing full protection can be issued and if the effort can be made tax exempt. And I will add that any American who calls himself a conservative, but is afraid to be openly identified with the cause of freedom, would help our cause enormously if he would join the other side.